Davis is probably lying, and Greta Garbo is probably crying, while Robert Taylor is locked in her dying embrace. Chico and Groucho and Chaplin and Lloyd are all super. Sweet Mickey Mouse, Shirley Temple, and dear Jackie.
Let's go to the movies. Let's go see the stars. I'm joined in studio by our resident movie critic, regular-sized Kev, Mr. Kevin Suarez. Kev, good morning.
Good morning, Sean.
Talking about a couple of kids' flicks this week. Mary Poppins Returns, a very long-awaited sequel, I would have to say, and How to Train Your Dragon number 3. Which are we talking about first?
Oh, let's talk about Mary Poppins. I never thought I'd be saying that, but Mary Poppins Returns is the sequel to the original from a good 50 or so years ago. She's now being played by Emily Blunt, with Julie Andrews stepping aside.
I find it rather interesting, actually, with this age of reboots and remakes and all this sort of garbage we see cropping up again and again. I mean, Spider-Man's a notable case. We seem to reboot that one 3 times in 10 years.
4 times now. We're into the Spider-Verse from last year.
You're quite correct. Yeah, absolutely. The Mary Poppins, rather than going for a straight reboot, has actually decided to make a sequel, which does take place, still takes place like 50, 20 years later than the original or something.
Yeah, roughly about 20 years. But to be honest, I suppose production-wise, it does feel more like a reboot because it's sort of treading through the same similar ground that the original Mary Poppins went through, and for better or for worse. But before I get to that, essentially it's the same thing as the original. Mary Poppins decides to visit the Banks family and looks after the kids while the parents have to deal with the bank. No joke intended there. The bank possibly foreclosing on the bank's house. So, yeah, it's an interesting movie. So it does capture, I feel, the sense of fun and wonder from the original. It does have all of the great animation and all of the musical elements from the original as well. A couple of great dance sequences. And I do feel that perhaps it's taking a little bit, maybe borrowing a pinch from the Paddington series as well, which also stars Ben Whishaw, as he also stars in this movie as well. And I feel that the acting and the production is top-notch, as you can imagine from something that I'm sure Disney was very fond of producing. I do enjoy it. Emily Blunt is great. Ben Whishaw is great. The whole cast is excellent. And I did enjoy, as I mentioned, all of the sequences of animation. It's great. It's doing the same thing as the original did. There's bits where there's live-action actors interacting with animated characters. Mm-hmm. Not CGI characters, but like hand-drawn.
That was something I liked when I looked at the trailer. And not that I'm going to rush out and see this one. I'm not that big of a Mary Poppins fan. But at the same time, I quite liked that they harkened back to the original style of animation with the cartoon characters you see in the trailer and the like. They didn't sort of go the CGI route. They decided to stick to real tradition.
It did, and I feel like it's sort of Disney saying, look at how far we've come in the last 50 years, that, you know, maybe we're breaking ground with the original Mary Poppins, but this is how it looks, you know, 50 years later. Mm-hmm. But the one main issue that I do have with it, there's two main issues, but the first one is that it's way too much like the original, down to the story beats, even down to the dodgy British accents by the American actors. Dick Van Dyke here reappears with his infamously bad accent. I think maybe it's gotten worse in the past 50 years. But Lin-Manuel Miranda, yeah, I don't know if he was deliberately going for the Dick Van Dyke as Bert Root, or if he sort of had similar issues with adopting an accent himself. And as well, I feel that I remember watching Mary Poppins when I was a kid, and I could go, oh, yes, every single thing that happens in Returns happened in the original ones. And I feel that perhaps they should have tried to go with a more different approach, maybe try and sort of recapture that sense of wonder using something completely different, maybe CGI characters more than hand-drawn. I'm not sure, but I feel that they could have tried something much more different.
Oh, well, a bit of a reintroduction to the character for a new generation. Just a final point, age range, in terms of you want to take the kids along to this one on this weekend, what kind of age range are we talking about?
I'd say about 7 to 12.
Ah, oh, terrific.
And just one final thing, the songs aren't really that memorable. I mean, like Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious is one of my favourites from the original, and there's a couple of others from the original, but here I can't really remember any of the other songs.
What was that song, Kev?
Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
Oh, very good. I can't get you. second film we're talking about this week, How to Train Your Dragon number 3. So this is obviously our third in the series about How to Train Dragons. Funnily yes. enough, yeah. What do we think?
I thought that it was okay as well. I thought that the animation and the voice acting, similar to the other two, was great. I mean, it's not really sort of breaking new ground here with the animation techniques or anything. You can't exactly see the grass flowing or anything. It's still the same sort of animation that we've come to expect from DreamWorks. And the story, specifically, I do have to applaud the story because it feels a lot more mature than many of the other animated stories that or movies that we see coming out nowadays. Like, for example, it's great that some movies like, as you mentioned earlier, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse mixes comedy and drama. That's sort of what I prefer. But I feel that it's good to get away from that sort of writing formula and to try and create something a bit more mature for a younger audience. So then maybe instead of just laughing along, then they can have some time to think about the themes of the movie, which is mostly about letting go of the past and to move forward in a different way.
It did strike me as a film series that seems to be growing with its audience rather than repeating the same sort of stock story over and over again.
Yes, like Mary Poppins Returns. And it exactly. It's growing. It's deliberately growing, I feel, as the producers, I think, deliberately wanted all three of the movies to highlight the emotional growth of, as well, of Hiccup, the main character. So here, the third one is where it emotionally pays off for him. And but that being said, I think that the plot for the third film, this one, the Hidden World, is maybe a little bit hit and miss. It doesn't exactly feel like it's anything amazing and wondrous like the previous two films. And it's the sort of similar sort of journey pursued by bad guys sort of film that we've seen in animation as well as in other genres as well. It's not exactly anything that is new for DreamWorks, really. They've done similar stories before.
Oh.
And the parents, if they haven't really been following it, or adults as well, such as myself, if they haven't really been following How to Train Your Dragons 1 and 2, they may not really enjoy or feel invested in the emotional elements of number 3.
Right. Well, Kev, thank you very much.
You're welcome.